Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Tomorrow is the first day of regular classes for Columbus City School children. It's also the first day of classes for the interim superintendent, Dan Good. He joins us today by phone to talk about the new year, what's working, maybe what isn't quite yet. And we welcome you to the show. Welcome to the show, Dr. Good.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you for having me.
There is an important levy on the November ballot. Columbus voters will decide whether to approve the 9.01 levy, bringing in an additional $77 million to the schools. And part of that, $8.5 would go to publicly funded charter schools. I know the levy campaign is separate from what you do, but voters don't like to reward failing schools as a rule. And that's just about the first thing the mayor says in his recently released campaign ad. We're going to listen to it real quick.
Okay.
Columbus is a great city, but when it comes to educating our children, recently our schools have failed us. We can no longer tolerate failure. That's why we have a plan that puts our children first by making our schools the best.
So, anyways, how much can the schools do during the next few months to influence voters on this important decision?
Well, I don't think it's how much we can do, it's how much we will do. And it's clear we're not up to the standard, but we're going to have to get there so that the community can take pride in their schools again. And I think it's important to keep in mind that what I'm doing as superintendent, what the board is doing, what the mayor was doing, what everyone else who values our children is doing is ensuring that we serve these children to the best of our ability, making certain they're prepared to go to college, get a good job, serve in the military, or even start their own business. And we need to have the resources, the support to make that happen. So we're focused on really listening to people. We're meeting with groups, parents, civic and neighborhood associations, business leaders, faith-based leaders, staff, students, non-parents, and we're answering questions and making certain we're delivering on those commitments.
You've been cleaning house, firing, or easing out the door employees implicated in the district's data scandal. Just because they were involved in the scandal, though, didn't make them useless, I would imagine. Have you hired others to fill some of those slots, or were those slots unnecessary to begin with?
It's a combination of both. There are some positions we were able to consolidate responsibilities and not have to fill, and others we reimagined to make certain they were supporting our new goals. So, we're putting the resources in the classrooms where we can support the teachers and support the building leaders to close those gaps in achievement. So it's been an efficiency measure as well as a streamlining measure.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm speaking with Dr. Dan Good. He's the Columbus City Schools Interim Superintendent. If you have a question or comment for him, he'll be with us for about 10 more minutes, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Dr. Good, you've been meeting once a week with the mayor, who has said that he doesn't want the job of running the school. So I'm wondering, what does he bring to the table? You've been doing this for a long time.
Well, I've been doing public education for almost 32 years,
right.
Superintendency for a little more than 10 years. The dialogue with the mayor has really helped me understand the intent behind the Education Commission and the commitments that that commission made, that 100% of Columbus kids would be able to attend a school rated A or B, that we would have high-quality preschool affordable, that we would provide more autonomy to principals so that they can control their staff and their budgets and other decisions and then hold them accountable, that we would focus together on recruiting and training and retaining strong leaders in our districts and provide more opportunities for our students to earn college credits and credentials in the trade industries. And those are the conversations we focus on each week, making certain we're in sync with each other and that we're honoring, again, those recommendations of the commission, which translated then into the board's levy request.
Coming up later, I'm going to welcome Mimi Chenfeld, author and educator, to the show. She's probably worked in many Columbus City School buildings in the past. She focuses on creativity and is always worried about the diminishing role of creativity in the arts in the schools. Do you have thoughts about that with 30 plus years in the business, how much they do contribute to it?
I think absolutely. I'm a strong advocate of arts education. I believe they provide an appropriate context for realizing any of the other languages, whether that be literacy or numeracy. We need to honor that there are many students that have that multiple intelligence, and that's the context that works best for them. So I strongly support that we continue those, and I'm pleased to see that we have a robust program in Columbus City Schools.
How do you or how have you encouraged the staff going into this new year? What did you say to them to raise their spirits after what is, inarguably been a really rough time for all the people out there who've doing their job, nose to the grindstone, trying to do things the right way?
You know, a couple of things, and it's interesting. I had a former executive director in the district I served previous to Columbus, and he traveled abroad. And when he was in this foreign country, a European country, there were children roaming the streets. And they asked the tour guide, don't the children go to school? And the tour guide lamented at how easy educators have it, that they have 2 weeks at the holidays, and they have their summers off, and they work a minimal day. And so I share that story with educators because it seems to be part of the cultural internationally right now. And all industries go through these phases, and I think it's our turn now to rise from that criticism and demonstrate the professionalism that we went into this with in mind. So our staff need to understand and need examples of that it can be done. So I share with them stories of schools where they've been able to move from from academic watch up to effective status in just a year. And that develops their efficacy. They already have the capacity. They just need to believe that they can do it.
We appreciate that you've been on all sides twice now. That's twice as much, twice just since July, and that's twice as much as the last superintendent was on in the last 3 years. Is that part of your outreach to the community?
Well, Gene Harris is a lot smarter than me, so it just takes me more time to get it right, I think. So, and she's a friend as well, and left a legacy of many wonderful programs in this district, and we'll continue to build on those. But indeed, it is a part of what I plan to do, and we have been reaching out. We've been to many civic association meetings, many parent meetings, teacher meetings already, and I believe we're listening. And in many cases, we've been able to provide some of the incremental objectives or deliverables that those groups have sought. And I think that's the way we begin to actually build that capital again that seems to be missing right now. It's one of our goals. It's our third highest goal, achievement being the first, and creating those stable, safe learning environments being second, but that community engagement is the third goal, and we're taking that very seriously.
You've been at it a few months now. And I'm sure you knew or you thought you knew what you were getting into. What's been the biggest surprise?
Actually, I've only been at it a month and a half.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. It seems like a year. But the biggest surprise, I think that, quite honestly, quite candidly, I think it's unfortunate that the Columbus is characterized as something very different than it is. When I arrived, I met highly professional, highly dedicated employees that have longevity with this district and that have produced some incredible results. And I don't know that it was a surprise as much as something that gave me joy and increased my hope and actually my will to kind of right the ship and turn the corner and begin to produce the results that we're capable of producing. So they're good people. And they're strong people, and they are going to deliver on those commitments, I believe.
You come from a suburban district, right?
It's considered a suburban-urban district.
Mm-hmm. This is an urban district, solid.
It is.
The biggest district in the state, one of the biggest in the country. Who are your peers out there that you talk with that are grappling with the same kinds of problems you will be?
Well, certainly other urban superintendents. Last week I met with the former superintendent of Chicago City Schools, and we were sharing some tools that have helped them affect change and sustainable change. We have a strong Ohio 8 coalition, and several of my colleagues in the Ohio 8 have reached out. And we certainly have ongoing meetings that focus on achievement and on human capital and a number of committees in that regard. But I think there are lessons I can learn even from Worcester, where I was superintendent previous to Westerville. And again, the poverty is poverty, no matter on what scale. And some of those same solutions are applicable just more broadly in this district as they were up in Worcester.
There are other changes afoot, including a new partnership for literacy with OSU. How will that work?
It's a great partnership. I'm very excited about that. We're actually providing training in reading recovery, which is an intensive reading intervention, almost a one-on-one model for closing achievement gaps and literacy acquisition, as well as a literature collaborative, which is a little broader and takes place generally at the intermediate grade levels of the primary settings. And so we've begun that already. There will be a lot of training. We've also decentralized many of our resources. So where we had a professional development center and a curriculum center in the past, many of the teachers on special assignment, the directors, the coordinators, the supervisors are now located in the schools where we need their support the most. And so they'll be assisting in the implementation of those reading recovery and literacy collaborative initiatives.
Reading Recovery is an expensive program. Is the initiative or is this partnership with OSU lowering the cost for you?
It's a shared partnership, so we have an investment on our end. But, you know, the schools that are eligible for title dollars, uh-huh, we're able to use those dollars to offset that investment.
So, and that's where it's needed the most?
It is. It is indeed.
There's also an expanded pre-kindergarten program, adding 10 full-day classrooms across the city. That has to be expensive, too. How many children are going to be served, and how are you paying for that?
Generally, there are 16 students served in each of our handicapped preschool classrooms. So 8 students identify with a disability, and then 8 students with what they consider typically developing, although I'm really not certain what that means.
Yeah, I hear you.
But it can be expensive, but it's the right kind of program. In many cases, we can diminish what are anticipated to be identified as learning disabilities later on in a child's career by addressing with intensive interventions those concerns in our early learning settings. That's also one of the reasons that in the levy, we've made certain that we have 100% of our Columbus kiddos will be able to attend a high-quality preschool and that it'll be affordable because we believe in that model.
Head Start's been cut. Are you concerned about those cuts and how they might play into what Columbus City Schools can do for its students?
I'm concerned about any reductions in a program that actually has sustainable effects, and Head Start is one of those programs. So, indeed, we'll have to think with our community how we partner to provide that sort of support for our early learners.
And there's going to be a new central enrollment center. What's the benefit of that? Might it be more difficult for some parents to get there? What's the deal there?
Well, it's difficult today, let me tell you. I think parents have realized that it's open and school's opening tomorrow, and so we were inundated with families yesterday and today. So we've added additional staff. But it's been open for 6 weeks now, and we'd only gotten a handful of customer concerns, which we were able to address in those 6 weeks. Unfortunately, yesterday we had many more families arrive, and so we've learned to better prepare for that peak in enrollment just prior to school's opening, and we'll anticipate another after Labor Day, and that's pretty standard for the industry. The benefits of it, we have fewer individuals entering the data, and because we speak over 93 languages as primary languages in Columbus, it's important that we're asking the right kinds of questions and inferring the appropriate meaning before we enter data into that educational management information system. That's the system then that also is used to help determine how much state funding a district will receive. So, for example, if you have upwards of 7,000 errors, which would be typical in a large urban setting, mm-hmm, it could equate to almost $40 million in lost revenue. So that data integrity is very critical. It also addresses the data integrity issue that's associated with the alleged scandal in Columbus City Schools. So, again, we have fewer people with access to the data, more training, better policies and guidelines to determine how they code the entries. And then the other piece, obviously, is the customer service. It's one-stop shopping for families, so they can get their immunizations for their child. They can have an assessment of their English language. They can have, if their child has a disability, they can have their individualized education plan reviewed with the goal that in 48 hours that child will be able to go to their school. There'll already be a desk in the classroom. There'll already be textbooks on the desk, and the appropriate accommodations will be provided so they can start school in a very, very positive fashion.
And then we could just wrap it up with a Facebook message from Kelly. She says, could you ask Dr. Good his opinion about flipping bell times for the elementary schools with the middle and high schools and extending the school year? Board member Mike Wiles made this suggestion. Research seems to support the notion that younger children do better with an early start and teenagers need to sleep in.
It's the right question to ask. It's certainly something we should look at. Probably as an industry, it would require a pretty significant overhaul of the system, particularly in Ohio, because of all of the extracurricular, both athletic and non-athletic activities that we make available to our secondary students in particular. And were those schedules to flip, of course, that would change that. And not that it's impossible, and certainly that not that it's not the right thing to do, but we would need to look at that, I think, as a whole industry in Ohio.
Well, Dr. Dan Good, have a great year with Columbus City Schools as interim superintendent.
Thank you so much. I look forward to talking with you again.
Thanks a lot. That's Dr. Dan Good. He's Columbus City Schools interim superintendent. Coming up, Mimi Chenfeld, author, educator, the queen of fun. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Dan Fisher. My next guest is Mimi Chenfeld, author, educator. I called her before, it's still true, the queen of fun. She has been working in the Columbus City Schools and around the country and around the world for 45, 46, 7, 8, keep going, 9, years as an educator. But her main focus is educating with creativity and using creativity to educate, and never the two shall be separated in her mind. Welcome back, Mimi Chenfeld.
Thank you, Anne. Great to see you.
I thought today we could focus on the parents. Now, I know in some ways we always talk about parents and the issue of creativity and how to inspire their children, but I know there are a lot of stressed out parents out there right now that they're putting those photos on Facebook saying, hey, first day of school, go, go Joey. But there's also a lot of people out there chewing their nails down saying they're as nervous about the next school year coming up as their kids might be, maybe even more so. They internalize the stresses that we all know about, from talking with Dr. Good to, the levy coming up, the issues with Columbus City Schools, the issues with a lot of the schools out there. That maybe they don't have much money, maybe they have a hard time with transportation, maybe they just don't feel very comfortable with creativity themselves. So I thought we could kind of talk about them today.
I think it's a wonderful topic. And Anne, let's expand so it's not just parents, it's all those who are caring for children.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Right.
Caretakers, families.
Yes. Because so many of our kids are with grandma or grandpa or aunt or uncle or foster home.
Right.
I mean, we have so many children who are in atypical, well, now that atypical is typical,
right,
in a situation. So
families,
anyone,
are different. Right. So whoever is out there biting their nails.
Right. And there are a lot of nails being bitten.
Yeah.
And, working with early childhood is a lot, which, of course, I've been, as well as all the ages. Once the parents or the caretakers leave in tears the first week, worrying and hovering and helicoptering, as soon as they leave, the kids are like, all right, what's going to happen now? We're on. But while they're there, Mom, don't go, please. And it's really so interesting because you've got to almost comfort and reassure the adults.
I think a lot of people are surprised, too. I was talking with somebody who was telling me how she was dropping her child off for first grade, I think, Grandview Elementary School, doesn't get any smaller and more community oriented than that. And she realized all of a sudden she was standing there and she got tears in her eyes. And that there's a level of stress associated with that. Something suddenly, there's a big change.
And it doesn't matter the age.
Right.
It doesn't matter the age, because the separation and the feeling of losing, the control of the environment for a child is very serious. And this is why at this time, which is so stressful for the teachers and for the kids, the families, the caregivers, it is even more important that they chill. If it's possible for them to just chill, because this is the only time those kids are going to school, and it doesn't matter, and the environment is stressful with the testing and the new legislation and all that, but this is their time, and they don't know. They have to live through this. So the least families can do is try to not contribute to the stress by making, you know, by first themselves, let's just take a deep breath. Let's just see if during the day when that those kids come home, there can be some fun. I've seen kids walk in the door, have a snack quick, a non-gluten snack or whatever they eat nowadays, you know, whatever the snack is, and then, okay, sit down and get to do. And little kids are bringing home seat work and homework. Right. Little children are bringing that home, which is kind of, you know, I've got homework, I've got to do. And if the folks get in on that pressure, it'll only intensify.
Let's ask people to call in with what their strategies are for chilling.
Absolutely. And let's suggest some things. Just the smallest amount of fun you can have with a child can mean the most, whether it's joking or laughing or sharing. Or, you know, we had teachers' orientation all over the city, and I was at one of them. And one of the teachers had her little one with her, who was about maybe seven. And the little one was just, I guess she couldn't get a sitter, so the kid was through all the sessions with the adults, and she and her mom were coloring. They both had coloring books out and crayons, and while the mom was listening and paying attention, she was coloring next to the little one. And the little one was just cheerily coloring and having a great time, and I almost wanted to get in on it with them.
Well, because, as a devoted doodler myself,
yes,
I completely
see. Get it. You've got to do your collected doodles, and that would be a bestseller.
Every once in a while I post them on Facebook.
But, you know, the slightest thing that could just relax a kid, let's go out and take a breath, let's take a walk, let's look and see if there are any birds' nests in the trees outside. Let's just don't even focus on the, quote, the requirements, the, you know, the pressure stuff. And let's do a song, let's do a walk, let's do a laugh. Always have some of the kids' books of riddles and humor around. Let's do two pages of riddles. I mean, it sounds like weird, but I think those few minutes can just calm a kid down and communicate that this adult who's in charge of me is not freaked out.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest for the rest of the hour, Mimi Chenfeld, author, educator, queen of fun. If you have a question or comment, if you have an idea, if there's a tradition in your family of how you chill out and try to get the school year off on the right foot and keep it there, give us a call and share your strategy. I hate that word strategy.
Yeah, I hate that word strategy.
Sorry.
I call it a way of being.
A way of being. Call and share your way of being with us, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Mimi Chenfeld's always up for a good conversation, so you can do any of those.
And you made a good point, and I think that this is something for folks listening to think about. Build in a part of the day with the children, so you establish a tradition. So this has become part of their day, of the expectations. You know, they get a snack, they wash their hands, they go to the bathroom, they maybe watch TV or whatever, video game for 20 minutes, but whatever, I don't know. But also part of it is something that's just off the charts, that has nothing to do with school, that has nothing to do with homework. You don't even ask them yet, you know, how was your day? What happened? Is it grim? So even if it was a bad day, they come home and there's something cheerful. There's something cheerful and fun that has nothing to do with school. Like, you are more than that. And then, okay, how did it go today? Mm-hmm. But not the first thing. You know, normally, you know, a family is sitting there chewing, as you say, the nails are all over the floor. And if the kid has a sad face, you know, you're a wreck and you're overly responsive. So this way, hey, I'm glad to see you. You know, how are you doing? How was the day? Did you see it started to rain and then it didn't rain? Whoa, that was, you know, did you see a rainbow? Whatever. Something that has nothing to do with the school day. I really think that's important. And then the school day comes, which is going to come anyway. What happened? Homework, I didn't do this. Because every kid has to feel successful. Mm-hmm. And if you start out with a grim, you know, tense questions, that can just multiply the stress. So I just would chill out part of your day, however you decide. I like the question you asked, people listening.
Yeah.
How do you do it? I mean, it could be, it has to do with you. You know, before I teach others, I must teach myself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to teach your child to be reassured and to be encouraged and not to worry, then you have to do that for yourself, too.
When you were a parent of young children, were you ever worried?
Oh, yes. Are you kidding?
I'm just telling people that Mimi Chenfeld
was worried. Are you serious? Absolutely. We had and you know, humor is the best. Humor is the best way to handle something. And if you, for instance, just, you know, I'll just give you something really weird. As I reminded my children of this, they went, "Mom, would you just stop reminding us?" But, you know, just, you know, kids are doing their homework all night and they don't clean the house, they don't pick up their room, the older kids, and the house is a mess, and they, you know, and they the sink has got stuff in it, you know, and they're running out the door, and then they come home and you're really upset with them, not just for school but for leaving all their clothes in a big heap in the room. But Mom, I had homework. So after a couple of stressful, you know, unproductive sessions, if it doesn't work, keep doing it. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
If it doesn't work, just keep doing the same thing.
That's the, of course, the definition of insanity.
Exactly. So anyway, this one day I decided to leave little notes all over the house for them. And one of them was like, "Dear Cliff, could you just get the hair out of the sink? Thank you. I'm so clogged up. Love your sink." And then I would, and then I put a note on the bed, "Kara, I'm just choking with all this stuff piled on the bed. Could you clear it up? Love your bed." So I just had the whole house full of little, and it was like, "Mom, have you freaked out?"
Yeah,
you
know? That's
but you've got to, you know, you've got to try to find a way that is more fun. And then when the kids are really like very, 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 very upset and scared and don't want to go to school because there's a test that day and they didn't, and they're grumpy, terribly grumpy for the week, which they will do, mm-hmm. instead of adding to the grumpiness because you are a stress and I was a stress, you know, I tried to be. So I go, "Kara, what a great smile. Oh, it's a joy to see you in the morning with such a warm..."
Even if she really didn't smile.
Oh, yeah. No. So, you know, you try a lot of fun ways to just keep it fun, make it laugh. You know, reassure them that this isn't the end of the world. My mother used to say, "This should be the worst thing that ever happens to you."
Right.
And I taught that to the kids. "Mom, I don't know. I didn't study. I don't know."
I always said, "You don't want to peek in the third grade. You don't want to peek in the fourth grade. You don't want to peek." Bebe and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bebe.
Yes.
Bebe.
Hi, Ann. Hi,
she's Jim. She is a fellow educator.
All right. Yep. I see. Former teacher.
Yes, I was a former teacher of many grades, but the when I was very young, I taught the first grade and second grade. And I think that there is a problem with giving young children work to do that continues the work that they did in school. I think when kids are young, their job is to play and do creative things, and that's what they should be doing when they come in for school, whether the snack is gluten-free or not.
Yeah, but nowadays parents don't have what do parents do?
Well, they don't have to. I mean, the teacher should not have the children think that they have to work when they get home. I mean, they're only 5-6 years old, and they don't need that. They need to come home and play, and as Mim said, you know, go outside, look for bird nests in the trees, in the fall, the color of the leaves. It's much more important, and do creative things rather than coming home and doing what amounts to busy work in the lower grades.
Some of the assignments that they give in the lower grades, I really remember as fun, like when he went out to collect leaves to make a poster of different kinds of leaves. Those were fun things that we did over the weekends.
Well, that may be, but I think that could be fun for the younger children. Mm-hmm. But I also think that having children sit down and fill out different things for as a guise of homework is ridiculous for young children. They really need the freedom to express themselves without any construct.
You know, it's just creating more work for the teacher, too. I'm wondering, why do they do it?
That's a good question.
There's levels of pressure.
It's,
you know,
just
there's
showing,
levels of pressure.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Bebe, this is a funny story. I was talking to some folks at a parent kind of meeting it was more community than for one school. And one of the moms said that her kid brings home homework every night. She's very proud that he brings home homework because he's getting him ready, you know, to apply to college and all that jazz. So anyway.
Did they say that with a straight face?
Yeah, well, practically okay. Says this is an academic oriented kindergarten. And so this other mom said, oh, my child doesn't bring home any homework at all. And I was wondering about that. I was going to go in and talk to the teacher about why my child is not getting homework. She was deprived. But, you know, this is going back to I always call teachers coyote, you know, the Native American character who was also a trickster.
Oh, yeah.
And
Riley Coyote.
And one of his jobs and his job description is tricking people into learning. And so I'll never forget Mary Byrne, who taught, I'm sure she's still in Montrose School in Bexley, wonderful kindergarten teacher. And just when the play was getting downplayed, remember, mm-hmm. BB, play was part of early childhood. But then it got downplayed. Then it got downplayed into
getting ready for Harvard.
Into
right.
skills, right? we took the first syllable of fundamentals and took it off, and then we just had the demental part. So anyway, so she had all her play areas in her kindergarten, like her dress up area and her blocks area. So she just changed them into workplaces. So instead of play, she had workplace one, workplace two. So the kids.
It was still the little play kitchen.
It was exactly the same.
Little play dress up
so
area.
So when the kids went home, when the folks said, what did you do in school today? You know, they went, well, we were at work. Well, I stayed at workplace two. I worked there. So a lot of it is just BS in education. You know, the really good teachers find ways to keep the joy and the fun and just, you know, please everyone with giving it a different name.
Right.
Well, I think that teachers, by and large, realize, well, I don't know, but teachers, by and large, should realize that children learn a great deal by playing, a great deal. And it's a wonderful way for a child to learn reading, writing, whatever the current fundamentals are of education. I think it's a wonderful way to learn. I remember, and I will close with this, when my daughter was in middle school, she wrote a story, and it's supposed to be a creative story. There you go, Mim. And the teacher said she didn't like the ending, so she can't give her an A. She could only give her a B+ or an A-. So I said, wait a minute, it's a creative writing expression, and she wrote the story. You didn't. So just don't give her the A. Doesn't matter. And I said, and also don't give any more homework. And this is she was 10. This is older. And and the teacher said, well, my child goes to school in Upper Arlington, and she's 7, and she comes home with a backpack full of homework assignments, and she was very proud of that.
This is going back to, first the pressure, and then people buying into the idea that this is what children need. And if you look at developmentally appropriate, just what you said about play, BB, is perfect. It's the center of how young children learn. And this is why we have to change the word from play, because people get all nervous about play.
Sounds so frivolous.
But the NAEYC says developmentally appropriate practices. And that's what it is. The center of it is play. So you're right on target.
It's all the semantics.
Yeah. You know, this is... Oh, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to thank BB for giving us a call. We appreciate it. Thank you, BB.
I just want to tell you that BB is the grandmother. I don't have children in the school.
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
Thanks.
So all those teachers out there can just relax. Because BB won't be knocking
not
on
be
your
there.
Door.
Knocking on their door.
My guest is Mimi Chenfeld, author, educator, queen of fun. We're talking about parents and how the parents can be inspired to just chill out and help their kids in so much as then, or so that they can help their children do the same as they jump into this brand new school year with all kinds of hopes and dreams. So if you have an idea, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out our Facebook page and post your question if you have a question or your comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest for the rest of the hour is Mimi Chenfeld, author and educator, the queen of fun. She has been teaching for 4+ decades all around the country. We've been lucky enough to have her stationed here in Columbus.
That's questionable.
You said you just gotten done with some teacher orientations.
Yeah.
What do you do with those?
Just what we're doing now. Try to keep everybody to remember what it is they're really doing. Those kids are coming to you. This is the teachers. They have got to have a good day. Every day, it has to be a good day. And it has to be warm and loving and welcoming and interesting and engaging and taking them away from whatever worries they have and make it easy and make it accessible and find ways to teach that will reach them, because not everybody learns the same way. And so if a child isn't learning the way you're presenting it, that doesn't mean a child is slow or whatever. It means that may not be that may not be the way that kid learns, because we all have our own unique way of learning. You could tell me something 100 times. I could just listen and go, duh. or you could give me the instructions for something. Follow these instructions. I can fake it. I could pass a test on it. I don't learn that. I probably need a puppet. I probably need clay. I probably need a choreographer. I probably need it in a song to tell me, and I would get it. So we all have a way, and to open up the teacher's way of being with the children so they communicate.
So do teachers get nervous too?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. They're all in the bathroom the week before. They don't leave. Oh, absolutely. Sleepless and insomnia and stomachs and nervous. And I mean, when I left the classroom, I loved being in the classroom. I loved it. And when I left the first few years, like in September, I was sick just from mourning and longing for my own class. And from the physical anxiety of being with my own class, because you never know. Every class is different. Every group of children is different. And what worked last year is not going to work this year. And you can't just take anything for granted. So it's a very emotionally exhausting and exciting calling. Mm-hmm. I don't call it a profession. I call it, but it's more than a profession, because mm-hmm. good teachers are called.
I was interested in what Dr. Dan Good, the interim superintendent of Columbus City Schools, had to say earlier on in the program about the teachers out there that are, you know, we're just going through this phase right now where it's so easy to diminish their role and diminish how important they are. They're being asked to get master's and PhDs now, and they're spending lots of money and lots of time achieving all those things, and yet so many people jump through the hoops. Yeah, they
teachers.
Resent. If I was in a classroom with the kids for as long as a typical teacher is, I would need longer breaks. In fact, by the way, everybody, I do need longer breaks. Anyway.
Just from hanging out with me for 45 minutes. She's retiring.
But I feel sorry for teachers.
Listen, I've been a teacher. I've been an advocate.
And there are crummy ones out there, and we know that.
And
that goes without
that's
saying.
Any profession.
Right, exactly.
But by and large, this is a profession of people that are such dedicated, caring, giving, and they're not political people. Teachers are really not political, no matter how much they've been labeled. And they're just out there doing their job, and they're caring about the kids. And I my whole life I've written for teachers and about teachers and caring about teachers. Because in this culture, they're so, as you say, they're targeted. And I think that just one thing that families can do is encourage teachers when a kid comes home after a good day and said, I had a great day. Mm-hmm. We did this wonderful thing. I don't see why everybody's emailing back and forth and the teachers have their email. Say, hi, thank you for giving my child a lovely day. He came home or she came home just full of excitement about what happened. Just
be the, 'cause that happens.
Because the first thing they'll do if something isn't good or the kid is unhappy or sad is be right there and say, why did my child blah, blah, blah. This time, thank you for a lovely day. Let's do more of them. I hope he has more of them.
We were talking a couple weeks ago, I think, about, you know, strategies for parents. And one of the things that came was, don't wait till something goes wrong to get to know your kid's teacher.
Right from the beginning. Yeah. As many of you as can.
So that there's a trust level built up when something may,
and a communication. You tell me, let me know if there's anything I need to know about my child. And I will let you know. Absolutely. That is so important. And I'm glad you brought that up. I'm so glad. You wanted to mention something else before, during BB or before BB. Mm-hmm. And that is... what do you love that you can share with the children? I mean, you may not be a nature person. You might be an opera person, mm-hmm. or you might be a music person. You might be a reading person, or you might be just a taking a walk person. So mm-hmm. what are things that you love that you can share, even in a small way, every day with those children, those kids when they come home? So that for that time, and that so that kid knows number one, that my adult here, my mom, my dad, my grandma, has something special that they love in their lives and enjoy, and they're sharing it with me. And so that alone is a terrific thing. Then I call it the magic vocabulary. But this way, say it's music. A child says, you know, mom, I want to play this hip-hop thing. No more hip-hop. Hip-hop is no good. You know, they have bad words. Mm-hmm. Well, find one that doesn't have bad words. I can't understand the words anyway. They could be the worst words in the world. And I swear to God, you can't understand them. So everybody's screaming about, these are right. obscene, terrible words.
And then they tell you what they are, and they're like, oh, I never even heard that before.
Exactly.
You're right.
But if you see these kids dancing, uh-huh. when I give them, when I'm with kids, I always give them this DYOT, do your own thing. After no matter what we do, and we do that DYOT, you will not believe what kids do that the teachers never even knew they could do. When you gave them that label, do your own thing. I didn't know Johnny could do that. He's just sitting there not being able to spell or write or read, but look what he's doing. Mm-hmm. So I think every day is sometimes DYOT, do your own thing for a little while, whether it's hip-hoppy or sing or strum on an instrument, you know. Or paint, or doodle, or walk, or cook.
Email from Jen. She says, I have two high school students, and over the years, I have found one of the most useful ways to reduce their stress is to remind them that the world is much bigger than their school. Kind of my way of saying, you don't want to peak in the fourth grade. In other words, there's a real lot more going on out there, and you don't have to be the most popular kid in the class. You don't have to be the best at anything. For a long, long time.
That's good.
And that larger world out there, I think it is good. I think the high school kids, I think, is good. They are starting to prepare for that. That's what they have to start preparing for.
And this way, the kids hear Jen saying that, and they know that she's not focusing on everyday failure, success, and struggles that day. She's, listen, it's part of a journey. You know, roll with it. It happens to everybody. We're all in it. Nobody wakes up perfect. Even Michelangelo, you know, had trouble on the ceiling, mm-hmm. you know. Michelangelo, get off that ceiling. You can paint on the walls. You do not have to climb those ladders. Anyway, but you know what I mean. The greatest people were just human beings. And I think that that Jen's approach is a good approach. That kind of so instead of a kid coming home and sharing stress and then watching the adult have more stress mm-hmm. over it, he's seeing a different response. That's good.
And I think too, you know, I always think about kids and their grades, and they're so hung up about grades nowadays. And
it's 'cause of the culture.
You know, hopefully, the teachers out there know, and I think the best teachers do that. the grade's one thing, but what does the kid bring to the class? What do they bring to the table?
Right.
Maybe they're great conversationalists. Maybe they do the reading. They like to talk about stuff. Maybe they're good on some things, but maybe they don't take tests. Maybe they don't study as much as they should. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean
This is why the testing is so horrible, because one statistic labels you or determines your fate, and it's absurd. It's just so absurd that, and we've spent billions of dollars on the testing anyway, we won't go there because
it's not going away.
Yeah,
you know,
but that's
I just don't think it's going away. And you and I have talked about it before. It seems
there seems to be such a feeling of futility. But you know, Anne, it seems to be there is a movement going around the country which is opposing the testing, and parent groups are starting, and they're starting to put pressure on authority figures to stop the testing, which is, what, two decades already of children just being lost in that kind of stressful situation and teachers being pressured. But let's hope we'll have a program someday. I might be 200 years old. Hello, Anne. I think they're finally getting rid of the test. In my lifetime, I can now die happy.
Let's see. Laura in Columbus, you're on the air with Mimi Chenfeld. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Hi.
Hi, Laura.
I wanted to say something, and this is going to sound as a ex-child. I didn't have children. I love children, but I didn't have children. But from my own memories and from relatives and children and friends, I really very much agree that children are not given enough time to play. And I do think that I hear a lot of people talking about going to, like, year-round school now.
Yes.
Going to what school?
Year-round.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't like that idea, because I think part of growing up was being able to play and to have that freedom. You'll have a whole adult lifetime, years after years, to work and work and work. And I think playing helps children to know who they are.
You know, I see exactly what you're talking about. Mimi's nodding her head, but in some places, for kids, when they get the summer off from school, they're just sitting home alone in a locked house, watching TV all day. They don't have parents at home. They're not allowed to go out and play because it's too dangerous.
That is true.
They lose a lot over the summer. They don't have books around the house. They can't go to the library. I don't disagree with you, but what do you think, Mim? I mean, does year-round school necessarily mean year-round?
Well, the year-round school usually means that the kids have times off during the year that are like 2 to 3 weeks. So they still have
just as much time off,
except that the school goes through the year, so that you might be assigned the summer time to be in school, but then you might have 3 or 4 weeks off in the winter. And it was established for, I'm not sure it's still in process in San Diego, years ago when I was talking to,
I think it is, but it was more
about
resources. They couldn't have the kids at school at the same time. They didn't have enough school rooms.
I think, you know, it's a mix, because what Anne said about kids who are home alone and who don't have an enriched, fun, exciting kind of choices for the summer, that could be a really, really big problem. And, you know, we have so many things available to children all through the year. We have the libraries, we have the reading groups, we have, you know, the parks.
And they're serving lunches and they're having
camps. I mean, we have things
like
for them, but I think the summer, listen, I'm in mourning over the summer, it's July 4th, they've got the school sales back already. So I agree with you about summer being a time that children could have the best part of the year.
Laura, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. Mimi, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you for joining us today.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Helping us kick off the school year the right way.
Oh, thank you, Anne, and keep doing a great job.
Thanks. That's Mimi Chenfeld, author, educator, queen of fun. She'll be back. Don't worry. I'll have her back again. I'll think up another great excuse, because there's always a million reasons to have Mimi Chenfeld back on. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your calls. Thanks for your emails. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.